As the nights edge toward autumn, bonfires burn and voices whisper of the nameless things that stalk between the trees. The flames become a beacon for lost souls and strange creatures, once driven deep into the forest, now long forgotten. But tonight, as the campfire dances and casts contorting shadows that crack against the tree line, your campfire, once a safe harbor of warmth and light, has become a beacon for the dark. From campground car crashes with lizard ladies, to goat-headed Boy Scout hunting freaks, join us on this episode of Belief Hole for Camp Creeply 4, true terrifying tales of twisted forest trails, and pitch a tent at the edge of the unknown.
Conspiracy.
Synchronicity.
Sasquatch.
Homunculus.
Alien races.
Satanism in Hollywood.
MK Ultra.
Tartaria.
There's like a whole... I've been watching this one guy.
Close the door, Ed.
Jury!
Close your door!
What's the,
Inner Earth. Disagreements.
Ghost Dad!
I like that movie.
Dogman.
Bohemian Grove.
Corey Feldman.
Magicians are demons.
Spectres.
Spirit summonings.
Paralysis.
Strange disappearances.
Sky whale phenomenon.
Yes! Alternative history.
Shadow people.
Shh, quiet! I'm trying to say words with the mouth.
It's getting dicey out there.
Poltergeists.
That's cool.
Anunnaki.
What is the moon?
Elf towers.
I would never talk about it. That's old.
Y2K.
Cover-ups.
Apocalyptic catastrophe.
Vampire. Well, hello, hello.
Hello there.
Hi.
Welcome to Bleeful. I'm Chris.
I'm Jeremy.
I am the amazing John.
Welcome to be here. Yes, welcome, welcome to Camp Creeply
4.
Yes, for those of you who are unfamiliar, we do a series of shows called Camp Creeply.
Yes.
And this is number 4. And actually, the number 3 is only an expansion member episode. So sign up for that if you want some more stories and you haven't heard the number 3. It was a pretty epic.
Oh, if you're a huge fan of the Camp Creeply series and you can't find number 3, yeah, it's a members only. So check that out. We appreciate you.
So Camp Creeply is our series where we tell true stories specifically about camping.
Yes, it's very themed.
Pretty clear, I guess, by the title.
Yeah it's pretty straightforward.
Yeah. It is getting to the end of the year and we realized we hadn't really done one through the summer. So we figured it's one of our last opportunities to get one in before the chill hits the air.
Yes. You know, I was thinking it's funny because we're doing the campfire thing and we're doing that next time. Well, they're not campfire stories, but it's sort of a campfire circle with another show we're really excited to do a crossover with. Expanded Perspectives.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Next episode will be a crossover with the legendary Expanded Perspectives podcast.
It should be really cool.
It'll be a lot of fun. Yeah, we're going to basically be kind of trading each other's listener stories. Kind of a show and tell. A creepy campfire roundabout.
Yeah. And if you haven't heard them, check them out. Well, I'm sure you'll hear them soon. But the great
probably
guys.
Probably have. They're a big show.
Yeah. They've been doing it for a good while.
So stay tuned.
But as far as our campfire stories for this evening.
Yeah.
What do we got coming up?
Oh, it is going to be an adventure. We've got Crocodile Lady car crash.
Okay.
Yeah. Horse girl.
Awesome.
Can't go wrong with a title like that. Boy Scout demon. And night voices. And some other really excellent stories, but that's just a little hint.
Taster.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Well, can we start right now?
Let's do it. Let's
just dive in.
Who's got the kindling? Throw it on there. Nice. Light it up, John.
Are you the counselor for this camp, Chris?
I'll be the counselor if you need one.
John, that means you have to listen to Chris, or he's going to put you in camp timeout.
And we can do the dishes.
And put me in the bonfire.
That's a pretty severe camp.
Into the bonfire.
Misbehave, into the fire you go. This is Bohemian Grove Camp. Camp Bohemian.
I was a camp counselor, fill-in camp counselor for 2 weeks.
You were.
I crossed the picket line.
Were you any kid's favorite?
No. No, I was one kid's favorite. And then he went home early. I had to sit up with him all night because he was scared. And I probably till 5 a.m.
You were like, want to know a secret? I'm scared.
I'm scared too.
I was like, monsters are real.
You're like, I'm horrified talking to you right now.
Yeah, we might have some flashbacks. If you guys are campers out there, we all went to Camp Luther growing up, camp up by Lake Erie.
And so some of those memories
are personal.
We've told it before.
I know. We don't need to keep repeating it.
Well, I'm proud of it.
I'm proud of
John's
it.
Just worried if anyone time travels, they'll find him at camp because they know which one when he went
I don't
to.
Like everyone knowing, like that could be a password for my one of my
is it?
Things.
Well, now you're giving
well,
that
I'm not
away.
Gonna tell you, but the more personal details.
I think we'll
you
go to Jake and like aerobics first.
Aerobics.
All right. Anyway, but yeah, I think you guys might get some nostalgic brushes, although horrifying potentially if you went to camp. So let's get into it. You ready? What's our first story? Our first story, this is pretty incredible in every possible way. This I wanted to do for a while. I came across it doing research for a humanoids episode or something, but it involved camp. So I was like, we got to save it for Camp Creepily. I came across this originally in Preston Dennett's book, who we've covered before on the show.
Yeah, great researcher.
Yes, and this book was from his collection called Not From Here. This was volume 4. And what I like about his stuff is he sources stuff, and I found the source for the story itself, so I actually am using the original MUFON report.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. But he did a great job. Check out that book. The chapter is about collisions with UFOs and ETs. Mm-hmm. So check it out.
Car collisions, car crashes?
All kinds of vehicles.
Hmm.
Okay, so this MUFON report was submitted November 26, 2011, and in the short description margin of the report, it just said, I must talk to someone. And this occurred on January 17th, 1989 at midnight. And this happened to a fellow named Drake. And it occurred at Spring Mountain Youth Camp, which was a camp for youngsters with behavioral issues.
Mm.
He was there to be rehabilitated. It's still actually a camp. And some of the people in the story are, well, they're all real people. And some people still work with that kind of correctional county or whatever.
Yeah.
So this I kept it somewhat anonymous. So it wouldn't be too, you know, but basically what... the same thing Preston did in his book, but let's get into it here. This is Edit for Clarity, and he reported this 22 years after the incident occurred. So let us begin.
This is called Crocodile Woman Car Crash.
In 1989, at Spring Mountain Youth Camp, located at Mount Charleston, Las Vegas, Nevada, I was involved in a vehicle accident while the assistant basketball coach, Joe S., was driving. I was in the front passenger seat of the Chevy Suburban, and we were driving on the camp's main road, Lucky Strike, formerly Reese Road. We were coming around one of the last curves when from the left side, a being stepped out of the woods and into the road. Joe didn't see the being, and we struck it at the last minute and dragged the thing halfway down the road until the Suburban went over the side of the mountain. Luckily, we came to a halt, slamming into a tree, and we were suspended in the air by the roots. Once I climbed back up to the road, I discovered the foot of the being had been torn off. It was nothing I'd seen before. It had three toes with sharp talons, black as nails. At this point, Todd, who went to El Dorado High School in Las Vegas, had also made his way back up the cliff. He asked me what had happened, and I pointed at the foot and told him we must have hit whatever this foot belonged to. Just then, we heard a noise on the cliffside. We went to look for what had made the noise and found a being laying on its stomach, attempting to crawl away. It had similarities of a crocodile, the way the back looked, and the tail and the mouth. When it heard me approach, it flipped over on its back. That's when we saw it had two huge breasts, the size of volleyballs or bigger, with a pattern on it that resembled the belly of an alligator or crocodile. It was female and had appendages that were similar to humans. When it realized I was there, it crawled quickly toward the nearest tree and used the tree to support itself to stand on one leg. This thing looked at me and Todd and began to cry with a voice that would sound like a child crying for help. I realized that it must be able to communicate in some way. I instructed Todd to do as I did, and we put down the sticks we were carrying, as we were no match to fight this thing, even with it missing its left foot. It was, after all, towering over us, 7 to 8 feet tall, as it leaned up against that tree. Three of my fingers wasn't equal to one of its fingers. Then it spoke in a loud voice, and I asked it questions, and it asked me questions. Now, this story goes deeper, because as we waited for help, a teacher who had left camp to go home found us on the road. We all approached him and asked him if he could help by allowing us to put the being in his vehicle and help us take it to the hospital. He refused and said he would call someone when he got to the bottom of the mountain. Well, eventually Joe, who had been driving, made it to the top of Reese Road with the remaining 5 or 6 kids and asked for us to walk back to camp. I told Joe that I wanted to stay with it because we hit her, and to leave the scene would be a hit and run. But he insisted, and we left as he promised to get help for her, the being he had hit. The next day, I was called into head coach Snyder's office. There, I met a man in a black suit with a black hat and was told to tell him what happened. As I told the story and got to the part of describing the being, this person in black interrupted me and said,
"It was a deer."
And I replied, "Excuse me, I was there. It was not a deer." So I began to describe it again, and he rudely interrupted again and said,
"Yes, it was a deer. Mister, may I remind you that you are in custody and we can keep you till you're 26.
So I finally relented and replied that it was a deer. I was mad because I was incarcerated to be rehabilitated, and now I was being forced to lie about the truth.
Weird.
Pretty crazy.
Yeah, especially that ending.
Yeah.
Like Men in Black.
Yeah. I mean, definitely an incredible story.
Very.
By the very definition of incredible, it seems not credible because it is just very insane. But we've covered plenty of stories about humanoids, male and female. It's interesting detail about the mammaries.
I don't know how you would not be like, I mean, a 7 to 8 foot standing crocodile person, how would you not just go into pure shock and panic? Like you would just be frozen in fear.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Unless you want to have a conversation. Maybe it had a gentle countenance. Well, it was crying like a baby, which made me actually sad. I just imagine it's there with like one leg just missing and it's just like bleeding out. And it's like,
yeah,
not like a normal crocodile would respond.
Yeah.
Where it's like probably just eat you alive. So what questions did they ask it?
Do you think the questions were about the meaning of life?
Or? That's what I was wondering. Ooh. Like, who's the learned ape who teaches the Shasham? You know that guy? What's the book? Ishmael.
Ishmael.
Yeah, yeah.
You said you shortened the story, right?
No, I took out like very minimal, nothing significant for the story. But there is a MUFON report. We'll link to that. You do have to pay now to get stories on MUFON. It's like $6 a month or something. If you want to get the actual reports, which is what I did, but he does say in it, I want to talk to somebody. So I'm sure a researcher must have reached out to him at some point. This was reported in 2011. I don't know if that had ever been published, what the conversation was about after that.
Yeah, if they asked each other questions, I want to like...
That's kind of an important part of the story.
I want to know, was it, how are you feeling? How's your day? Or was it more, where do you come from?
Yeah.
What is the meaning of life? You know,
what are we doing here?
Right. Is this real?
My cynical brain, when I was reading it, was thinking, well, this was a behavioral facility, and maybe he didn't like the basketball coach, Joe S., who was allegedly driving this, and so he just wanted to like make up a crazy story to get him in trouble. But then I realized, no, he reported this. It was 89 when it occurred. He reported it in 2011. So for him to suddenly be like, I'm going to get back at Coach Joe.
It definitely lends a little bit more credibility when it's that many years later.
He hung on to it
that
long.
Or could there be memory issues that long after? Who knows?
Or maybe he just had issues. Or is he anonymous? Do we know his name?
Drake. Which also kind of made me think like, is this a made up story? Because Drake is dragon crocodile.
Maybe he just wanted to use an anonymous name that was similar to the idea in the story.
Or maybe his name is Drake. I left out the guy's full name, but I looked him up. He still works there. The coach.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he still works. Or in that correctional area.
We should reach out.
Interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, I wonder if he knows there's a story about
it. And what we need to ask him, what happened to Miss Lizard? Do we know? Because it doesn't say in the story, because he left the coach to deal with it, right? He's like, I promise I will make sure it gets home okay.
I would imagine the Men in Black took care of it.
It was a deer.
Anyway, I wanted to start with that one because I think it's a great palate cleanser for our normal reality. And it gets us right deep into the strange.
Let's go to the next one.
Campfire Tale 2. What do you guys want to do? John, why don't we do one of the ones you did? Why don't you decide?
We can do Boy Scout Demon.
Boy Scout Demon.
This comes from a listener of the show.
That's right.
Who wishes to remain anonymous. But they submitted it to us. This took place at a Michigan campground up north around 2003. And it's called Boy Scout Demon.
My story is from when I was between 10 and 11. I think it was a long time ago, 20-ish years. First off, I was homeschooled my entire life till college, so I didn't make many friends or get out much. So my mom and dad got me to join Boy Scouts as a way to make friends and get some useful skills. I didn't get friends, but I got some great life skills. So we were going to a camping outing sometime in fall. The campground setup was a bit weird. It had one road up to the campsite that made a big circle that looked kind of like a keyhole. In the middle, however, was this small grove of trees. The campsites were all set on the outside of the circle with the grove by itself. It was a bit chilly, so to keep warm, we really didn't go beyond the fire's edge. At this point in the evening, we had already eaten and just been eating s'mores and telling campfire stories. Of course, we started telling scary stories. A few kids started with some classic murder stories, then a few Boy Scout kidnappings, Michael Myers type stuff. I myself was terrified as I thought I kept seeing things moving in the background of our campsite. But it was just shadows from the dancing fire as best I could tell. Anyways, I eventually was tired and a bit scared, so I decided to go to my tent to sleep. During this whole time, I felt something staring at me from somewhere behind me. I was too scared to even look until I got up to go to bed. Then I saw it in the grove of trees in the middle of the campsites. It was tall, about 8 to 9 feet. It had goat legs, a human torso, and horns. Its eyes glowed red, and all around the creature was this red mist that was flowing through the air. It just kept staring at me through the trees. It looked like it was on fire almost. No one else saw this thing. I ran to my bed, zipped up my tent, and my sleeping bag covered my face and hoped I would wake up the next morning. I think I prayed to every god I knew of in hopes one would let me live. It was the absolutely most terrifying moment in my life. It was also the moment I started questioning everything in my life.
Wow. That would be horrifying.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy because it sounds so similar to a story we did on a Strange Listener Stories episode as far as the description of the thing. Remember, they were at home having a party or something. These young kids were sitting on the roof.
Oh, yeah.
And then down the street, it was like the energy changed and they saw this horned figure
manifest
in flame almost coming towards them.
It was like a typical devil type figure.
I think even with a trident thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, what is out there?
And when we were kids, we had a friend and his brother Cameron. Remember, told us the story about he was hunting right around here along the trails by the Tuscarora River. And he said he claimed to have seen a goat-legged horned creature of some kind.
What's up with the goat leg?
I don't know.
It's a goat man out there.
I mean, you go pan. It could be always a pan situation.
Mm-hmm. Public monster.
Anytime a goat is involved, it does make me feel like it's a demon.
Well, especially if it's a man goat.
Yeah.
A goat man on two legs. I mean, a regular goat's not too scary, but when they're standing up.
Gonna either be scary.
They're pretty creepy.
It's gonna either be a forest spirit or some demonic creature.
Yeah.
Flip of the coin.
That's a terrifying forest spirit. I mean, it doesn't necessarily have to be demonic, right. But it's a monster of some sort, that's for sure.
Definitely be unsettling.
Well, you said forest spirit. It does sound like you have the dryads.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
Nature spirits. It could be something that's
it was surrounded by a mist too, so.
Or so it was almost like on fire, right?
Yeah.
Well, red
it was
mist.
Like a misty fire thing. So that kind of makes me feel like it might have been from a video game.
Okay.
What? I don't know. I think
like
of
it
like,
came out of the game?
I can just see this misty kind of...
Yeah. Umbra around it.
Just a misty mist of fire. Like it reminds me of a video game.
That's what you're saying. Yeah. Something you run into like in Doom or something.
Mm-hmm. Supernatural spells coming out of it.
Yeah.
It makes me think of all those freaky fogs, Fortean mist that we covered from Jenny Randall's and the dimensional gateway potential openings.
Oh, like the mist is a clue of how it's maybe moving between the worlds.
Yeah. It's always a colored mist, either yellow or maybe red. The smell of sulfur, silent insects.
Yeah. Liquid tool to get you between the realms. It reminds me of someone wrote in, because we talk a lot about the show called These Woods Are Haunted, which is on HBO. I don't know if it's still running, but there's like 3 seasons at least. Really great show. I never watch paranormal shows anymore just because we don't have time and they're rarely good. I feel like this show is excellent for some reason. I don't know where they get the people, the actual witnesses, but
it's the testimonials that make it really good.
Someone wrote in and said, we need to check out the episode with, I think it's Emilio. And it reminds me of this because essentially it...
Oh, that was another goat-headed kind of horn thing.
It was I think it had antlers, maybe goat legs, but it was basically this kid that had been left behind
he didn't want to go fishing or hunting with his parents. So he stayed at their little RV or camper, whatever it was, cabin. And he starts hearing footsteps come up and he hears the voice of his mother saying,
"Come and answer the door. Let me in."
Oh, that's right.
And he's thinking, why would she not? Maybe she's holding food that she'd made. She usually makes breakfast. Maybe she can't get in. She needs help with the door. But then the thing becomes insistent and he realizes this isn't my mom.
He realizes that it's got a robotic tone.
Yeah, it has the robotic mimicry tone that we hear about so much with Tim Arjanko.
You know, like the disembodied voices.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a real phenomenon.
So he goes to the window and looks out and he sees across from the little drive there, right in the tree line, is this, like his brain can't even wrap his head around. I think he's like, what, 8 or something, 10? And it's just this like deer-headed, antlered, bipedal, basically like as people would define or describe a Wendigo creature.
Like a skinwalker, maybe.
Yeah, that's what you would, I think that's what someone suggested, even though that's, you know, a Navajo thing. But anyways, whatever it was mimicking his mother. And it's super convincing. We'll link that episode in the show notes. But you hear some of these people and they're just completely devastated, traumatized from these experiences. What was this demon, like our listener here who wishes to remain anonymous, seeing this goat man in the woods just seemed to change their lives forever? And of course it would.
Definitely. Wouldn't be something you would ever forget. And it would change the rest of your life because you would realize that there's just a whole side of life out there that is not talked about, a whole dimension of potential that most people don't acknowledge or believe or understand or know about.
Right. Completely blindsided when it happens.
It would be hard to fit back into reality after that. Because it'd be like all you could think about.
Especially hard to go back into the woods.
Oh, yeah.
Something you hear so frequently. Lifelong hunters, just they never go back. Like they've hunted their entire life since they were a boy. Now they're in their 50s and, you know, it's their favorite thing to do. And then after this experience, they won't even go down a country road alone.
Yeah. That's the sad part. Your favorite thing to do in life is kind of destroyed.
Yeah, because you realize you're among predators and you've just been lucky all this time.
Supernatural predators. It reminds me, John, of a great man once said something like, there are so many grains of sand in the
there's more
oceans.
There's more strange things in the universe than there are grains of sand on all the beaches of the world.
Oh my God, you said it right for the first time.
That's not fun.
Grains of sand, strange things.
There are more beaches of sand than there are grains of strangeness.
Had a hard time saying that my whole life.
Hey, you nailed it this time.
Yeah, it's good.
Kind of a drag.
Anyway, thank you for sharing, Anonymous. We know your name, but we will not be saying it here.
Let's move on.
Yes, moving on. Our third tale of intrigue tonight will be... Jerry, you want to pick one?
Sure. This next story comes from Ray Carroll. He actually had kind of two stories that were submitted, but this one was germane to our topic today because it took place while he was camping. We may revisit his other story at some point down the road that kind of leads to a life of some of these kinds of experiences, specifically with what you might call sky visitors.
Oh, yes.
But this took place in the spring of 2016 in Taos, New Mexico, and it's called Night Voices and the Golden Triangle.
When I was 23 or so, I was living in my truck and seeing the country living the vagabond life. I had a partner and a dog at the time, and we were camped out on the gorge of the Rio Grande, right outside of Taos, New Mexico. We were sleeping in the bed of a Chevy S10 with a roof topper turned into a house over our heads, so we couldn't see the sky. We had a window on one side of the panels that opened up, but the blind was pulled shut. There was a lady in her car, camped out on the same parking area at the end of the dirt road to get there. She had a small smart car looking thing, and no blinds or anything, just sleeping in one of the seats, I'm guessing. My partner was sleeping next to me, and my dog, Tim, was outside sleeping and keeping guard, as a road dog does. Sometime around midnight, I started hearing strange noises outside of the truck. It reminded me of the sound that the Predator from the Alien vs. Predator movies would make. Only not menacing, it sounded as if they were having conversations. I heard multiples of these foreign voices around the edges of the truck and underneath it. At first, I tried to logically think about the critters it could have been, but my mind came up blank. The more they purred and clicked at each other, the more I got freaked out. I knew it had to be something that wasn't doing me any harm, though, as Tim was not barking. Anything that approached the truck or wherever we were sleeping, Tim would always howl at it to scare it off and run after it if it was something he wanted to chase, but I heard nothing from him. So I figured if Tim was okay with it, then it must be okay. I thought about waking my partner up, but I thought if I'm already scared of whatever it is, why should I wake her up too to be scared? I realize now this is flawed logic. I sat and listened to them moving around and seemingly under the truck for a couple hours until they eventually went away. The next morning, the lady in the car came up to us and said, "Did you guys see that last night?" I said no, but I had heard some weird noises around the truck. She tells me, "There was a huge gold triangle-shaped ship that came and parked right over the gorge above us. It stayed there and just hung out for a couple hours and then flew off." Anyway, thanks for having such a great podcast and giving people like me the opportunity to share these bizarre stories.
Eerie.
Thank you, Ray.
Yeah.
Kind of reminds me of that story. Do you remember the story of seeing those weird beings outside of the car?
Yeah, I was thinking that outside the truck, those cloaked.
Yeah, almost like alien. Yeah, the cloaked beings.
Yeah.
Kind of has the same vibe.
Yeah.
Oh, dude.
Was that on another Cam Creepily episode, maybe?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it might have been the one in the expansion. I'm not 100% sure, but yeah. But I remember that vividly. And we also discussed that when we talked about the, what's the one off the coast of California? The tall black cloaked figures.
The Dark Watchers. Of the California coast.
Yeah. It also reminds me of the Glimmer Man phenomenon we covered a couple seasons ago. The ITEs, the invisible. Yeah.
Well, this specifically in this story with the sound, the predator sounds.
Yeah.
The clicking. That's the only way he could describe it. And we hear that so often.
And this was a listener submission, right?
Yeah, this is Ray.
Pretty incredible.
Yeah. It must have been an interesting life to be on the road with your partner and your dog. Your road dog there for protection.
Sounds like the Jeremy dream.
Interesting. Yeah, that's something I always want to do. Interesting that the dog did not respond.
I love those sorts of stories where someone experiences something bizarre, like hearing those sounds outside all around his truck, but it's like trying to think like, it's probably nothing. I don't want to worry about this. And then the next day someone comes over and it's like, "Hey, did you guys see that giant craft in the sky? That golden triangle?
Right above us all
night?" Yeah, crap, it was real.
Yeah.
Yeah, that would make the hairs on your head stand up.
That'd be so funny if your hair just went straight up.
That would give you a static charge for sure.
Creepy. Thank you for sharing that.
Thank you, Ray. That's seriously fascinating and freaky tale. You mentioned the cloaked beings from someone camping in their truck. Mm-hmm. We told that story before. In the expansion, there is going to be some great cloaked entity run-ins while camping.
Yeah.
You could do a whole episode on these cloaked robe figures. Moving along.
All right. Submitted for your approval. Sound familiar? We're going to do a pretty incredible story. This comes from, this one comes from Reddit, but, it has a lot of tones of truth in it because it's not super fantastic in the way that it's unbelievable, but it is a very unsettling story. And I think very believable if you follow the things that occur within the belief hole. So this I've titled Horse Girl. There was a camp in Malibu Canyon called Lazy J Ranch Camp, and my parents sent me for 2 weeks when I was 8 or 9. It was the only sleepaway camp that I made my parents pick me up from early. I went to a bunch of SoCal sleepaway camps, and I have never experienced anything like this in my life. I slept in my parents' bed for like 6 weeks after. The camp had a lot of land, and it was mountainous, and literally in the middle of nowhere. The boys' barracks were directly behind the outdoor stables for the horses. Yet, there was no stable. They would chain the horses up directly behind our cabin in a big raised polo-type field. In between the bunks and the fence, they would chain the horses to what was like a 5 to 6 foot sloped dirt hill that ran down to the foundation of the bunk. One day, 6 or so boys in my cabin were throwing pebbles at the girls' barracks, and we used the path behind our bunk to sneak in and out without our counselor noticing. We ran back and forth exhausted, playing this game until the 6 of us ran back for a final time through the alleyway, just below the horse fence. As we were sneaking back, we looked up and saw a girl, maybe 7 or 8 years old, sitting on the top of the horse fence bar, which was level to the roof of the barracks. One of the boys I was with said something like,
"Hey, what bunk are you in?
We won't throw rocks at that bunk if you don't say it was us.
And then the girl started swinging back and forth on the fence, using her hands to support her. And we were all like, what the f*** is she doing up there? Someone else from the group shouted at her and was like,
do you even go here, horse girl?
Because we could see this kid clear as day, and we knew she hadn't been in any of the bunks, nor had she been at any of the three meals with our age groups throughout the week. Within seconds, the girl looked behind her as if something came up to her, like a horse, because she was looking to pet something, but we couldn't see past the fence because it was on a small hill above us. Suddenly, this girl was thrown from the fence and did like somersaults down the hill, all f***ed up and contorted. And she came to rest about 5 feet in front of the first person in the alley. I was behind him. And we all freaked out, screaming like little girls because this girl looked like a pretzel, lying against the foundation of our cabin. We ran to our counselor, and he got up and went back there. And I swear to God, there was nothing there. We had run maybe 30 feet around the corner from where the girl was lying to get an adult, and there was nothing. Our counselor got so mad at us, but too many of us had seen it just to let it be, and we all wanted to go home that minute. Some of the kids that saw it were so scared they had full-blown tantrums to get their parents on the phone. Our counselor had to call the camp manager. The response to the matter was very strange, thinking back on it now. After we told our stories to the camp manager, he looked at us in complete shock. He was speechless. The guy goes on to say,
who can stay the rest of the week and have a really fun time?
And like 5 to 6 of us were adamant that we wanted to go home now. He then goes on to tell us that before the camp, there was a horse ranch here, and that one of the horse rancher's daughters used to feed the horses. One day, while feeding the horses, she was sitting on a railing, and a horse came up from behind her, wanting food, and she got scared and fell forward down the hill, breaking a bunch of bones, and died. My parents picked me up within 2 hours, and the car ride home was silent. I brought this up to my mother recently, and she was completely dumbfounded. My mom told me that she was called from the camp manager that night, saying that a big fight had erupted, and that me and a few other boys were harassing the other campers. And that's why they had to come get us. I don't know what to make of it, but it was real to 6 and 8 year olds.
That is creepy. I mean, that is definitely like the ghost of that girl.
Yeah, pretty horrifying.
It would definitely be traumatizing to see a girl like pretzeled all up.
Yeah.
And then she's just gone.
Yeah. So that's the idea, is they basically saw a reenactment of what had happened to this girl.
Yeah.
Was it an echo, or was it a, you know, conscious aware disembodied spirit stuck in?
It does seem like an echo because it's like, yeah, imitating that
the actual event that occurred. Yeah.
I hope it's not the girl.
Yeah.
No, she's gone. Stuck doing the same thing over and over again.
I always wonder about that.
Stone tape theory. Limestone.
Limestone.
Mm-hmm.
Granite too.
Can have that effect, allegedly.
Conductor of souls.
I heard a story recently about a guy who took his own life, and they believe they were speaking with him, and they asked him where he was.
Oh yeah.
And you know, heaven or hell, you know, where are you? It was one of those Ouija board or some sort of communication stories. And he responded like somewhere in between, essentially.
Oh, this was interesting. Yeah.
And he said, how long are you, you have to be here? And he said, 27 years, which was the same amount of time he lived before he died.
Before he took his own life.
Almost like he basically had to live that same time that he spent here before his traumatic death. Makes me wonder about spirits that, if they're not tape echoes, if maybe they are just, they kind of have to live in that trauma or that difficulty to process it for the same time. I don't know.
Yeah, specific
well, that
time.
One, but that girl didn't take her own life though.
I just mean, hear people getting traumatic, you know, deaths. But of course that's not, wouldn't normally be the case with all the near-death stuff.
Yeah, who knows what the actual rules are, if maybe you're imposing your own rules on yourself too.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's self-inflicted karma.
Yeah, where your mind's at, what you anticipate, you know, what you maybe manifest with your direct experience after this realm.
I just saw that After Death movie in theaters. It was good.
You're kind of an expert now. You've seen so many. How would you compare it to what you've seen before?
A lot of the stories I had already seen.
Okay.
I thought it was good though. It was good for people that don't know a ton about the stuff.
Mm-hmm. Introductory, kind of.
there was a lot of fact-based science behind it. And yeah, I thought it was good. I mean, if you are into the near-death experience phenomenon, it's in theaters right now. It's called After Death. I think it's only playing in select theaters, though. But once it comes out, you know, released into the world, I would definitely check it out if you're into that stuff. It was good. The cool thing about it was a little bit more Hollywood, so the reenactments were much higher quality than what you typically see.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. That'd be cool to see. John, did you see that? We talked about this before, but Bigelow, he did that competition for Proof of the Afterlife several years ago, and he submitted it. I forget what the prize was.
Eternal life.
Eternal life. Yeah. $100,000 or something like that. It might have been bigger. Maybe it was $1 million, but it was like for the best evidence that you could be fact-checked.
$1 million?
Something high. You could Google it. We covered this before, but anyway, I'm bringing it up because that was concluded. It finished, and there's now you can buy them. It's like, I forget how many books, several books, red leather-bound books. You can buy the collection of all of his best research collected by all of these different doctors and physicists and all people from all over, you know, mediums, but everybody trying to bring their best evidence of the afterlife. That'd be cool to have in the studio, you know, on a shelf.
It was $1 million.
Was it $1 million?
It was a prize, yeah.
Yeah.
I think the best evidence when it comes to that stuff, a lot of the times is...
the anecdotal stories?
I think the corroborating points of view. We are going to do another near-death show, and the angle might be along the lines of doctors, specifically experiences of their patients.
Right.
Yeah. And was it in the film? I'm not sure if that was actually in the film. I think that might have been an audiobook I was listening to. But just when you hear the doctors... Oh, no, it was in the film. When people are clinically dead and they're flatlined and they're gone, they don't have... You know, their eyes are closed and they're essentially brain dead. And then they come back.
Yeah.
And then they talk to the doctor in the, you know, when they come and visit them later and they tell them exactly
what they had said.
Yeah. Not only like what they did, but the procedures and the tools used and like what doctors did what and the personal things that were going on. Like certain doctors make a mistake.
Yeah. And that stuff is fascinating. There's no way you could know
there's
that.
There's no way that you could possibly know that. So it's interesting to hear it from a doctor's perspective and how much it freaks them out. Like, there's no way you could possibly know that.
Absolutely.
And it's coming from a trusted source, which is a doctor that didn't believe in anything until they actually had that experience.
Yeah.
I think that's kind of the most compelling. Because you can never really prove it with science.
Right.
At least right now.
You can't really measure.
Right. It's very difficult to be in that situation and measure something when someone dies.
I think we did that story once. I don't know if it was a nurse, but it was something about a shoe. You remember that?
Yeah. On top of the building. Yeah. We've covered that a couple times. They left the body and saw like a red shoe on the roof of the hospital.
Right.
And then lo and behold, she comes out of surgery and she asked the nurse about.
Yeah. Or it'll be a conversation about what doctors or nurses were saying outside of the room after the flat line and everything. And like how there's no way they could have known the conversation that took place even outside of the room.
Right. Yeah, it'd be fun to get back into this topic. We did in season two, we did a pretty deep dive on near-death experiences. We talked about Raymond Moody, all his work.
Right.
With his book, Life After Life. And who was the other guy? Atwater was another author we covered, Beyond the Light. Yeah, so definitely cool to get back into that.
Yeah, and but hope that this poor girl who was seen falling, hopefully she is moved on. And this is just a tape echo, replaying energy from a traumatic experience.
And if it is her... She at least doesn't have to be in pain.
Yeah.
Isn't it weird when you're in a dream and you know you should be experiencing pain?
But you don't.
But you still kind of feel it. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Almost more like it's usually a pressure or a temperature. It's not usually. I mean, sometimes you can have pain and you wake up because you are actually in pain.
It's not nearly as intense as physical pain,
being shot.
Unlike emotion, where I feel like emotion is
weird.
The opposite.
Emotion is more intense.
Yeah, you can have some pretty intense emotions in dreams.
Yeah. Remember, like something that wouldn't bother you when you're conscious.
Yeah, isn't that weird?
Yeah. And it can linger,
like,
too.
Like, way more intense. Like, maybe there is something in your life that is bothering you or has bothered you in the past.
And you've just been burying it.
Yeah. Or it just doesn't affect you that much when you're awake.
Right.
But you kind of go back to that point.
Yeah, even like old relationships. You might not think of someone or feel those feelings, but then you have a dream and you're like, it's like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Or like you're jealous about something your girlfriend in high school did. Like, this is a dream.
Yeah, it's very strange.
It's 20 years later.
Anyway.
Humans are weird.
I say we take a quick break. We step away from the fire for a minute and maybe find a tree. use a restroom.
Why don't you give a very quick summary of what the expansion is, Chris?
Yes. Oh, yes. Expansion. Well, expansion, very quick, is going to be a continuation. The fire is going to just get higher for the campfire. We're going to continue on with strange camping stories. Some of the more incredible ones will be in the expansion, and we're going to have a special guest pop in and say hello because it is that time of year, and I always miss him around Halloween. Art Bell will be gracing us with his presence.
From the high desert in the great American Southwest, I bid you all good evening. This is Ghost to Ghost AM.
Against his will.
Holding him hostage.
We're going to hear a couple camp stories specific to his Ghost to Ghosts that were so classic for us growing up.
Nice.
So you don't want to miss this extension of Camp Creepily 4. You really don't.
Oh, yeah. And for those that are new to the show, expansion is essentially another release. Every time we drop, we release a special extra episode for expansion members.
Yes!
And if you go to Beliefful.com and click the big red button to sign up, you will find over 100 episodes that have already been placed in the catalog. So
yes, just waiting for you.
Yeah, they're just as produced and just as researched, just as fun.
Just as long. That's important. Yeah. It's not an extension, even though it's called the expansion. It's full episodes.
Yeah, you're just getting double the content. Really.
So if you run out of the hole,
run back in.
Do not fear, for boredom is about to be demolished.
Obliterated.
Where boredom goes to die.
All right, guys, we'll see you back in the fire in a little bit.
Now here is a clip from this expansion episode.
The only weapons they could find were the steak knives and a tire iron. Yet they could not just sit by and listen to the pitiful cries and do nothing. Bravely, the two entered the mouth of the tunnel, weapons and flashlights in hand. Quote, "We had barely walked a dozen yards when we saw a greenish glow ahead of us. As we got closer, we could make out the dark figures of two men in hooded robes. It was clear that they intended to block our going any further into the mine." End quote. The men whispered to each other that they were in for it now, sure that they had stumbled onto the activities of some satanic cult that practiced human sacrifice. As they drew closer, they saw that the hooded figures were barely 5 foot tall, and both Dwayne and his friend, being muscular and standing over 6 feet tall, felt sure that they could handle themselves, if it came to that, against a couple of, quote, midget cultists. They boldly demanded that the hooded figures release the women that they were hurting. Then both the figures replied, weirdly, in unison, in a deep, mechanical voice, just as Miss Hall had described in Missouri. Quote,
"The women are beyond your help. Leave at once or perish. Leave at once or join them in the caves."
Dwayne shined the beam of the flashlight directly into one of the being's face and was surprised to see what looked like a red.
We are back.
Welcome.
For round two.
Have a spot by the fire next to me.
Welcome back to the fire.
Yeah.
Warm your toes.
It's chilly out there.
Toes only, please.
Toes only.
Next story, please.
Get out the fireside whip.
The camp program director's here, and John will be leading the way to our next story. Oh, before we jump into Billy's account here, fantastic story. I just wanted to mention this because I thought this was really interesting, John. You will get a kick out of this.
Yeah, hit that like button, too.
Well, if you're on YouTube, go ahead and hit that like button.
Hit the subscribe.
Hit the subscribe as well, and don't forget to get notified by hitting the notification bell. That's also very important.
Yes.
If you keep coming for every episode and you're not subscribed, you're doing it wrong.
I'm missing out.
In Dark Mountain. Okay.
Yes. I was just going to say, this is really interesting. Our last episode, for those of you who haven't heard it yet, for some reason, we did Halloween accounts of strange things happening on or near Halloween. And one of the stories, in fact, the very first story was Cameron's account of the stranger.
Freaky.
In the gorilla suit that came into the house, walked through. I won't spoil it all if you haven't heard it, but basically, very unsettling. But I came across this in research for this episode, so I just wanted to read it real fast because it sounds so familiar.
My youth group played at a campsite for a weekend trip. We were all in the cabin playing cards when someone with a gorilla suit ran by the cabin and started banging on the door. It really freaked everyone out because it was no one in the group.
They came back a couple times until one of the adults confronted the person and they ran away. They never found out who the person was.
Maybe it's the same guy.
You're just showing up and doing gorilla stuff.
Wonder if it took place at around the same time. Where was that camp at? Was it the Carolinas?
I'm not sure. That's all the information I have. It was just a short little Reddit blurb I saw.
Serial simian.
Yeah. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there because it was weird and connected to last episode.
Yeah.
But now, shall we enter Billy's story?
Yeah, this is called Beyond the Bunk Beds, Billy's Summer Camp Nightmare.
Hello, hello. My name is Billy, and my sister sent me your podcast a while ago, and ever since then, she has made me a belief holer or belief holian. I don't know, whatever one you want to use.
The scientific term is a beliefling.
But she actually had submitted one of her stories not that long ago about the shiny man. She kind of inspired me to share my story. I grew up in a pretty religious family. So talking about the supernatural was kind of out of my realm, and I didn't think it was totally real until I experienced it. I grew up going to this really small Bible camp in the Northwoods of Wisconsin, and I had always loved going there, so I was really excited to be a camp counselor the summer after I had graduated high school. Now, to lay it out for you, the cabins at this camp were very rustic. I mean, they were just a square with four walls. There was a door in the front and a door in the back, and when you went in, it was just a row of bunk beds on either side. And the counselor, so myself, you slept right next to the door on a single bed. So the week was going really well. I was getting to know the girls and we were starting to bond pretty good. And one of the girls came to me telling me that she was experiencing some things and was pretty scared about some of these things that were happening, but she didn't really want to elaborate because I'm sure she just didn't want to talk to me and think that I was judging her. We kind of tabled that conversation and I just said, you know, like, let's come back to this when we have some more time. Now, these cabins had no air conditioning. It was just windows that you just had to keep open and run fans and hoping that you would cool off. And I will never forget this night because it was just that dead summer humid heat. The weight of the heat just feels heavy. There was a window that was right above the counselor bed, right next to the door where I slept. I'll never forget this because there was no wind that night. It was just that absolute dead heat. I woke up around 3 o'clock in the morning and the shade that was right above my bed all of a sudden kind of started to blow out from the window and then hit the window again. As if like a wind was coming through the window, it was just like pushing it out and then it would fall back and slap the wall. I remember waking up to that and kind of being weirded out. And so I just like quick pulled up the shade. I remember looking outside and there was a lamppost, kind of like a street lamp that was just across the road from where our cabin was down by the lake. And I remember staring at it and it started flickering. I just assumed that it's an old camp and things are kind of breaking down. Things are very rustic. There isn't a lot of things that had good upkeep at the camp. I still just was not convinced about the supernatural even at this point. I sat back down in my bed and I felt this chill, this absolute freezing chill that went through the front door of the cabin, down the row of bunk beds, was just like there. It just stopped. And it was such a bizarre feeling. I looked across from me in the cabin and one of the girls that was sleeping in the bed across from me, she was sitting up in bed. So she had both her feet on the floor and her hands on the edge of the bed as if she was standing up. It was kind of still dark in the cabin and I was kind of squinting my eyes trying to figure out what she was doing. And I just kind of quietly asked her if she was okay or if she was going to be sick or needed to go to the bathroom, and she didn't respond. I honestly assumed that maybe she had a history of sleepwalking or sleep talking, so I just kind of let her be and just kind of observed just to make sure that she was going to be okay. All of a sudden, she started swaying back and forth and back and forth. That's when I kind of started to get freaked out. After that, it was almost just like this domino effect down the row of bunk beds. The girl right next to her that was on the bottom bunk, she had her feet in her sleeping bag and she would lift her feet and drop them. So there'd be this loud thud. And then she'd pick them up and drop them. And the zipper from her sleeping bag would hit the metal ladder that was on the bunk bed, just making this clinking noise. Some of the other girls just kind of started mumbling and almost like crying in their sleep, and I could not really figure out what was going on. And at this point, I was just absolutely terrified. And I remember like pulling the blanket up so my eyes were just kind of like peering over the edge, just watching and wondering what the hell was happening. There was another girl that was on my side of the aisle of beds, and she would start sitting up and then laying back down and sitting up and laying back down, like pretty much like she was doing sit-ups. And everybody in the cabin was doing some sort of movement or crying or rolling in their bed. I just basically sat there and was watching. And because it was a Bible camp, the first thing that I did is I started praying because I was quite honestly terrified. This went on forever. All of a sudden, out of nowhere, one of the girls on the back corner of the cabin just let out this blood-curdling scream. And then everything just stopped. Needless to say, I did not go back to bed that night, and I watched the sunrise. The next morning at breakfast, I remember looking at the girls, and a majority of us just looked purely exhausted and just dead tired. I just kind of nonchalantly asked them if anybody had any dreams. Like 90% of the girls in the cabin had these horrific dreams, these horrific nightmares of, I don't even want to say, but terrible, horrific things that were happening to them in these dreams, except two of these girls had dreams about my grandmother. For the first few nights that we were at camp and trying to get to know each other, some of them had asked if I would tell them bedtime stories. So the only stories I could really come up with were these stories of me and my grandma. I grew up right next door to my grandma, so I had a lot of very fond memories of her and spending time with her. And so these two girls in my cabin had these dreams of being with my grandmother and just like feeling very safe with her. The crazy thing is the dreams that they had were honestly memories. They were memories of mine that I had with my grandmother. One of them in particular, one of the girls was talking about how she played a grocery store with my grandma as if she was a little girl. And that is specifically one of my most fondest memories that I have with my grandma. I had pulled that girl aside that I had mentioned earlier about her being scared and asking what was going on. And come to find out, right before she came to camp, she was hanging out with a friend. And sure enough, they messed around with the Ouija board and some freaky things happened and she got scared. And so they kind of got rid of it. I have always kind of wondered to this day if something either followed her or attached to her. I'm really not sure what had happened, but all I can say is that it was the most terrifying experience of my entire life.
Wow, that is a crazy story.
Yeah,
that intense. Is definitely, there's a lot to that.
Yeah,
there's a lot of layers in there.
And the discovery of, before coming to camp, the one girl had played with the Ouija board. There's yeah. always a question like, well, did it, something come along?
It's like camp, you know, one kid has the flu and comes to the cabin, everyone gets the flu. In this yeah. case, everyone gets possessed.
That would be wild to see that all unfold in front of you.
Oh, yeah. It seems like it's going through the cabin.
Yeah. Like everyone's being possessed. There's something about sleeping, too, that you're just the most vulnerable at that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And especially children, I feel like.
And on your back, mm-hmm. they say.
It's interesting that the grandmother was almost seemed protective.
Yeah.
Was it, she said two girls?
Two girls had dreams of the grandmother that she had told them about earlier, like to yeah. comfort them from, you know. They're like memories to her.
Well, that was weird too, but just the fact that it was only two of the girls that were kind of protected from that.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely very interesting.
Just the whole thing is just so many questions.
Yeah, a lot of little facets. Also interesting that her sister, we did her story in the past, The Shiny Man, and there seems to be a connection with spiritual warfare and protective spirits or angels. I think The Shiny Man was like this angelic figure that had visited her sister, Abby. When she was young, she would have night paralysis and terrible, terrible dreams and nightmares. And the, you know, mother would come in and try to comfort her. And she would see this glowing, like illuminated, all white robed figure, just angelic, like you'd think of as an angel. And she would just say, "It's okay, Mom, the shiny man is here." And like, it freaked the mom out. Like, where is the shiny man? Oh, he's in the corner. And after that, never had an experience again. But it's the same thing as far as like, whatever the role the grandmother seemed to play in this for these kids. And I guess, our listener here that submitted this, Billy, went on to study spiritual warfare in college because it made her so interested in the idea of the spiritual realm and spiritual beings.
I want a shiny man.
I want a shiny man.
So have on hand?
How do you study spiritual warfare in college?
There was a class. Well, she did go, she did go to a small, I don't know if she was referring to this, but she did go to a small Christian college. So I don't know if it was there.
I would think it would have to be some sort of religious school to have to any have sort that. Of course offering like that.
Specifically on spiritual
warfare.
I
wonder what that course was
Unless
like.
Unless it was like a historical, like the history of spiritual warfare belief
How
systems.
How can you have like a history of that though?
You could have like these religions.
Yeah. But I feel like spiritual warfare is more like.
Like here's your crucifix and holy water. Go get those
that's
vampires.
What I think of, but I'm probably not what it is.
It's probably more like how to arm yourself with the armor of God and more of a biblical approach, obviously, like
yeah.
faith
prayer and stuff.
Right. I don't know. We don't know. But yeah. Anyways, fascinating.
We are speaking out of our bottoms.
Spiritual warfare is the Christian concept of fighting against the work of preternatural evil forces.
Yeah.
It is based on the biblical belief in evil spirits or demons that are said to intervene in human affairs in various ways.
She had a firsthand account of that.
Speaking of demons and intervention, there was an older lady at the camp, a counselor that I guess volunteered like every year. Billy described her as the most wonderful person on this planet. And so Billy told her, you know, about what was going on. And this lady specifically wanted to see where this took place, what cabin. Then she went on to pray over the doorway and they all prayed over each of the beds with the girls. And I guess after that, nothing else happened. So there was kind of like a little blessing exorcism that seemed to work. So I guess spurned her onto the spiritual warfare research.
But that's nice.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that.
Yeah.
One of the better stories I've heard in a while.
Absolutely. And if you guys have stories like that, she would like to know. As so many listeners do, they want to know, has anyone else had an experience
yeah.
like this? And
mix it up in the hall.
Yeah. Thank you, Billy.
Speaking of mixing it up, we're going to do a quite a turn here into a very unique account by one of our listeners from Norway. This is an interesting account. We've covered Huldufolk or hidden folk and gnomes and other sorts of creatures that a lot of people believe to be fantasy on the show before. In real encounters. I mean, this is one of those such stories during a camping trip. This comes to us from, he said we can use his full name, and it is quite a long name. I'm going to try to get it right here.
I feel like this is a trick.
His name is Rune Karlarsblad Skorstad Petersen Fjeseth. And
okay. I don't think you pronounced that all correctly.
No, I didn't.
Valiant effort.
I know. I did take Norwegian for a little bit on my Duolingo app. But I didn't learn any of those names. Apologies. Anyways, this happened in Norway, obviously.
Our homeland.
Our homeland of our blood, our ancestors.
Homeland.
Jaska Spisa Bjornen.
Jaska Dai.
This happened in 2008. And let us begin.
Huldufolk Party.
This story happened to me and my best friend one Hallow's Eve. We had decided that a bonfire and a night out would be just the thing we needed. We went to a lake where we knew there was a lean-to and made camp there. In a short amount of time, we had a fire going and were ready to watch the stars and moon trek across the sky until early morning. After shooting the breeze for a few hours and sharing some spit-roasted meat, we both started hearing music. We both got quiet at that point, just listening. I think we sat there for nearly 2 hours listening and wondering if we should walk over and see what was going on, maybe join the party. We could hear voices, talking and laughing, even singing, though we could not make out any of the words, neither in the conversations or the singing. As we listened, I could swear the music got closer, and eventually it sounded like it was just beyond the tree line. Then we both heard a voice declaring,
"There's no one here when the party is over."
I looked over at my friend, and his wide-eyed, pale expression said it all. We said nothing, just gathered all our things, put out the fire, and ran for the car. When we got to it, we just tossed all the things in the back seat and got home. Neither of us said a word, and after I dropped him off, we didn't talk for 2 days. When we spoke again, we were reminded about a story both my grandfather and his father had told us about the people that live in the mountains, the undergrounders, as we call them. They told us that once a year, they get out from underground
and have a party. And if you hear them, you will be so enthralled that you will join them. And if you do not get out before dawn, they will take you with them.
You heard that before.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd be fun to go.
I think it would be. I think you just may not come back.
Yeah.
The undergrounders.
Do you get a chance to leave the next year?
Like, does a window open during the next party?
Do you go back to dance? Like, you, now you're one of the regulars?
Well, you go above ground again for the next party. Can you go next time, or do they brainwash you?
Probably wouldn't want to anymore.
Are they like the Amish?
Is that how it works with the Amish? You visit one of their dances?
I mean, the Amish allow, like, the...
Rumspringa.
Yeah, that's what it is.
Oh, so they might release you back into the wild for a time?
You can go out again, but it may be more fun to just stay with them, you know?
Like with the Amish.
Yeah.
Rumspringa.
Yeah.
Yeah, fascinating. So many aspects of that are stories we've talked about before. Also, the by the lake thing, it reminds me of, I forget her name now, we'll drop it in, but
Anna.
She had sent in this incredible story about her grandfather who was camping by a lake, again by a lake, and actually saw these miniature people on the shoreline across the water.
In the fog.
Yeah. Having a little party. Always having fun.
And I played a tale.
Initiating episode flashback.
Season 2, Episode 9, Terrorized by Gnomes.
I listened to your guys' podcast while hiking in the woods, which in itself can be scary because in northern Sweden, we have a lot of scary folk stories, Vikings, and forest people. I remember how my grandfather told us not to hike too far into the forest, that something was there. He talked about a kind of phenomenon called Vitra that has been here for a long time. Everyone up here in the north knows what Vitra is. It is often explained as small people living underground. Some of them can be benevolent and mean no harm, while others can act with malevolent intent.
Regarding Vitra, like so many folktales, it is different depending on the region. Where I live, older people tell stories they heard as children, as their parents experienced. My grandfather told a story his dad experienced when he was a kid. It was around midsummer. And he and his friends had been out fishing when they suddenly saw lots of small lights on the other side of the lake. They managed to steer the boat a little closer. And there, in the middle of nowhere, they see 8 to 10 small people. Imagine little trolls. They looked exactly like ordinary people, but they were incredibly small. Maybe max 50 centimeters in height. 19 and a half inches. That's really strange. Yeah. Can you imagine that? Mm-hmm.
Anna continues. He had heard of Vitra before, but never believed it. However, he knew that you should show respect and be on guard. What happened exactly, I do not know, but Grandpa has told me as a child to come into the cottage when the evening fog comes in. For some reason, he always had respect for the fog. There's a lot of stories that relate to fog and these things appearing.
That's creepy.
I want to see that.
Yeah.
And now back to Rune's story.
It's interesting. So yeah, he said... Because I'd asked him, like, what kind of music was it? You know, some follow-up questions. He basically said it was, you know, what you'd picture, sort of flutes and drums, like you heard there, violin. And I asked him about that. Like, what was so frightening about this? Why did you know that it wasn't just, you know...
People.
First of all, the instrumentation. Also, he said that the statement that voice that they heard, he said it wasn't sinister, but it was, there was a malicious glee in the statement of after the party's over, nobody leaves.
Yeah.
Sort of like a threat. You kind of wonder, were there other campers that were at the party? Other humans that he was referencing?
Maybe on the other side that did get fairy napped.
Really interesting.
It's interesting in his connection with his grandfather's story, how during the experience, it was talked about with his friend.
Yeah.
That maybe we should go join him. They said it sounded like fun and that.
Initially, they were like, we should go. Should we go over and hang out? And then because of the old stories, they're like, wait a minute. They were a little more hesitant.
I don't think... Well, they didn't mention it in the moment.
It wasn't until after the experience that they remembered the grandfather's story.
Oh, right.
They just left because that freaked them out, what the guy had said.
Yeah. So in recollection, when they were talking about the story that the grandfather had told them, the same thing was, you know... Yeah,
like they were almost drawn to it.
People are drawn to it. And then... If you don't leave, then you get sucked underground.
It's such a typical, the being drawn to like the fairy circle.
Yeah, even in even in English folklore with fairies, the fae folk, it's the same sort of like you get caught there too long. You get seduced in by music and drink and
then cut your shadow out.
That's right.
Cut your shadow off.
Sell to the shadow people.
That's right.
Don't let them get it.
They can move between the worlds.
Thank you for sharing that story.
Yeah, that was a great story, Rune. Thank you so much.
Yes. And it ties into Jeremy's final story.
I wonder if we're related to him.
Probably. He's Norwegian.
There's only a few left.
Only a few Norwegians. I'm joking, obviously. Maybe we're cousins thrice removed.
Thrice removed.
One of his names in his very long name is our mother's maiden name before they changed it when they got to the States.
Peterson.
Then we definitely related.
Absolutely.
It has to be.
There's only like a couple Petersons over there.
And my middle name is Fjaseth.
Well, there you go.
Thrice removed.
All right. This next story is going to run along the same strange vein.
Yeah. So I found this while searching for camping stories in the Fairy Census from 2014 to 2017.
Great resource.
And I call this Gnomes of the Lake.
There's that lake again.
It's called Gnome Island in here.
Yeah. I couldn't remember what I called it. Gnome Island, it's called.
That sounds fun.
Approximately 18 months ago, a group of 25 friends and I went camping in the far north of Minnesota, in the Boundary Waters canoe area. On our fourth day, we found a secluded island in one of the lakes and decided to do some fishing and extended camping there. After much discussion of what we wanted to do for the fifth day, we decided to stay camped for the day and relax on the island. On the morning of the fifth day, we were all getting ready to go swimming and fishing when a friend called the rest of us over to look at something he found on the other side of the island. When we went to the other side of the island, we were all gobsmacked. We witnessed what can only be described as gnomes. Short, about 16 centimeters without a cap on, just over 6 inches. Human-looking beings with tall caps and rough homespun clothing. We witnessed both male and female gnomes, as well as a few children. The gnomes were aware of us, as was obvious by the way they would occasionally shoot us the evil eye, but made no malicious or threatening moves towards us. We sat there and watched the entire village for about 95 minutes or so before we left to go about our activities. We camped out on the island again that night and were not disturbed by them. I went back near where their village was early the next morning and left a gift of a gold ring that was supposed to be given to my deceased fiancé. I think it's what she would have wanted, because I remember reading about gnomes working with gold as a child.
So that's weird. It's kind of sucky for the fiancé.
Well, she's dead.
That's sucky too.
It's also sucky. But yeah, it's an interesting choice. Leave your leave a golden ring for the, I mean, I guess. Yeah, maybe wish. I mean, no, you're supposed to leave gifts.
Yeah.
But it is odd. To watch 95 minutes, that's just over 3 hours. You're watching a village of gnomes play and hang out.
Yeah.
And then you're like, we're going to go, I don't know, maybe we'll go do some like kayaking and come back. Like, this is so weird, like, you know.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't bother us and we left them alone. That's just so odd. There's like, it's almost like.
Maybe they cast a spell on you.
If the story's true, it's almost like there is this kind of.
Field?
You don't see, you know, you don't see anything
of
here.
Forgetfulness.
Yes.
Yeah.
Forget me now.
Forget me now.
A veil of unconcernity.
Yeah, where you're just like, oh, this seems normal. Or like, it's kind of, this is interesting, but it's not going to be enough to like alter my course of activities or go report it.
That reminds me of those group of hunters that saw that UFO.
Oh, yeah, the cube. We covered, yeah.
And yeah.
If it wasn't on film, they would have completely forgot about it, but they actually filmed it.
They're just like, oh, that's a weird UFO.
Yeah. It's a square in the sky.
And then they just walked away.
Yeah. If you guys haven't seen our Invasion of the Cubes episode, we talked about the black sky cubes, and there's footage of this cube that these hunters film. It's like almost like a little probe type thing.
Yeah.
But it's just above the ground, you know, floating there, and they're all staring at it. The camera, you know, pans over from the hunters to the cube and then back. And then one guy's like, well, we better keep going. And they just walk on their way. And then they totally forgot about this incident, almost like their memory was washed until weeks later, one of them was editing the footage and was like, oh my God, I forgot.
That's so weird.
Yeah, definitely check it out on YouTube where you can actually see the video. We play it there.
Yeah, I'll put a link in the show notes for you guys.
I was going to say, and for those of you who are still on the fence about the whole gnome situation or the Hold of Folk, you definitely need to listen to our episode from season 2, Terrorized by Gnomes, Horror of the Hidden Folk, because we went hard into the paint.
That was a great episode.
Yeah. We went really deep with the research.
Pretty much proved that they exist.
Without a doubt.
100%.
All right. Our last tale of the night. The fire's getting low. Let's get it going.
This is called Midnight Fishing. And this also comes from Preston Dennett.
Around midnight one evening in July 1962, two buddies were fishing for walleye pike on the pond created by Foot Dam near Oscoda, Michigan, only a few miles from Wirt Smith Air Force Base. They would often see jets landing and taking off. On this evening, the jets had finished their maneuvers and the two men were fishing in the center of the miles-wide reservoir. Without warning, the complete darkness was pierced by a bright light overhead. Writes one of the men, "Looking up, we saw a huge ship, hundreds of feet in diameter right above us. There was no sound. It was flashing all sorts of colors. It was immense and terrifying. Almost immediately, it seemed that numerous fighter jets came pouring out of the runway. Slowly, the ship rose until it appeared the size of a half dollar and zoomed to the west almost instantly. The men quickly returned to camp, built a bonfire, and went to sleep. The next morning, listening to the radio news,
"This, Phil, apparently there was a massive UFO sighting last night."
They learned that the local police stations had been flooded by callers reporting UFOs.
Wild stuff.
Wild stuff.
Weird, wild stuff.
Just see if we can get the radio host on the show.
Yeah.
Do a good job.
He might be interested.
Excellent story from Preston Dennett. So we bookended it with Preston Dennett's work.
Yeah.
That's cool.
I think it's easy for these stories to be glossed over because we have so many accounts like this, but to actually be in the middle of the reservoir that happening.
It'd be terrifying.
I mean, I had an experience seeing a UFO from a very distant location, but to have it be right above you in the middle of a miles wide reservoir.
Dude, and the vulnerability of being on the water.
Yeah.
In a little boat. Like, you can't run anywhere. It's right above you, massive.
It'd be shocking.
It's such a cool, I love that imagery too of like, that, you know, fighter jets take off all the time. They're done for the day. Then this thing appears and then you hear them coming.
They're like, damn it. I thought work was done.
Yeah. Like, thank God this happened by an Air Force base. It's going to chase this thing out of here before it has a chance to suck us up.
It'd be funny if a fishing line came out of the UFO.
And the human like bit the hot dog and it pulled them up.
And they were just fishing for actual fish.
For regular fish. Yeah.
Reminded me of Brian's story. That was in the same area, roughly. When he saw the fighter jets chasing those strange shapes in the sky that were like, you know, a mosquitoing across the sky.
Oh, so many stories like this.
Yeah.
I mean, there are so many stories that obviously we didn't have time to put in here that were camping stories where exactly the same thing. You have lights in the sky, insane things, and then fighter jets. Actually, I think the story from the Golden Triangle.
Yeah.
And the truck camping from Ray, his earlier story that we didn't tell when he was younger was essentially the same thing. They saw this crazy circling lights in the sky that almost landed and then took off after these fighter jets. I mean, it's always fighter jets chasing and, you know.
Trying to get them, can't catch them.
Try to get them, can't catch them.
Anyways, we hope you enjoyed Camp Creepily 4. If you haven't heard the other versions, feel free to peruse the earlier versions.
And if you want to learn how to not get abducted by small cloaked men in the desert and taken down into caves to be tortured, then you want to tune into the expansion episode.
Oh, yeah.
Yes!
We'll be reviewing some of those stories, which are fascinating. And fun.
It's in your best interest.
It really is.
Yes.
Oh, and a big thank you to the hundreds of people that came out for the meetup in Michigan. It's hard to talk to everybody, but I think we got to talk to the most important people.
At least three.
Yes, at least three people.
Thank you. Big hello to Andrew, Josh, and Hannah.
And Hannah,
Hannah with those awesome little ghost guys she made us.
Very sweet.
Super cool. It's really cool talking with you guys. So hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Right on. All right. Well, before we go, we have some special people to thank.
Yes, we do.
You're the best around. Nothing to done and to keep you down. You're the best.
Is that what it is?
Around. Nothing to done and to keep you down.
Thank you. We will begin now.
Welcome to.
Thank you to be here. New members.
First, we have Alexis Robb.
Ooh, I'd rob her for an Alexis. Right? Does that make sense? Welcome to be here,
Thank
Alexis. It's very happy to have you.
Classic friend.
Yes.
Ingrid.
Ingrid. Hey, Ingrid.
Ingrid.
Aw.
Thanks for sticking with us for so long.
Yeah, what a sweetheart.
She's a dogman whisperer.
Oh, all right. Joining the pack.
Next, we have Desiree Murphy, another dogman whisperer.
Heck yeah, Desiree.
Those are my favorite kinds of beds.
Bring the fire.
Murphy bed.
Murphy. Okay, great.
Next, we have another dogman whisperer. Three shots in podcast.
Three shots in podcast. Welcome aboard.
Mm. Oh, it sounds like it might get a little tossed in there.
Sounds like there might be a little drink going on. Go check them out.
A little sun in the sun.
Learn them up.
Next, we have another Dogman Whisperer. Nice. Cody Johnaway.
Ouch. I give my John away. I give my John away.
Take him or leave him.
Just kidding.
I'm staying.
Thanks, Cody. Thanks for being here, brother. Appreciate it.
Next, we have Jennifer Sunvieri.
Oh, beautiful. Elegant.
It's poetry to my ears. Welcome in, Jennifer.
Elegance is Jennifer's last name.
On deck, we have Nelly.
On deck.
They're up to bat
right now.
Up to bat. Sorry, this is the first time I read names.
You're doing great. Good sound effect.
Raspberry.
Nelly Santana.
Yes.
Oh, right.
That's a band.
That's a guitar player reference.
And finally,
we're really good.
For our Patreon members, we have another Dogman Whisperer, Shayla R.
Nice. Welcome, Shayla.
Shayla running in the pack in the front.
Howling in the hole. Happy to have you. Welcome to be here. Thank you for us to be have you.
Thanks, friends. Jeremy, you're up.
Okay. Coming into the hole as a black-eyed cool kid, we have Ross Simonov.
Ross Simonov. All
welcome
right.
Welcome to be here.
Welcome.
Spicy.
Hi, Ross.
I watched Friends last night.
Haley Cranford is here.
Matthew Perry died.
Oh, gosh.
Rest in peace.
That ruined Haley's name.
I felt really bad. I didn't even know, and then I saw him the other day. Sorry.
Oh, R.I.P. Matthew Perry. Yeah,
I know. He was great. I loved him.
He was on the funny dude.
TV last night.
We could just talk about this for a while.
He was on TV.
Friends. Okay. I watched Friends last night. Yeah. Anyways, it's like coming home.
Here's to Matthew Perry.
God bless you, Matthew.
All right, next in the hole, after Matthew Perry, is Haley Cranford, a Dogman Whisperer.
All right.
Cran it up.
If you were a fruit, you'd be a cranberry.
That's right.
But that's a berry, not a fruit.
A picture sweeter than a cranberry.
They're tart.
Yes.
That sounded just aggressive.
I meant it as a compliment, but it awesome. Came
you're
out
sweeter than a cranberry.
You bet you're sweeter than a cranberry. You're more like a Honeycrisp apple.
Settle down.
Honeycrisp apple.
No.
Welcome.
Anyway, she's a Dogman Whisperer, so she could eat all of us alive. Thank you so much for being here, Haley. You rule.
Haley, pretty name. I like it.
He's no slouch. He's Stephen Klaus.
Yes.
Stephen Klaus.
An off rhyme.
Klaus Pickles.
Klaus Pickles.
Yes.
He's of the Klaus Pickle Empire. Welcome, Stephen. We're so glad to have you in the hall.
That's Klaus.
Allison O'Rourke is here.
Yes.
All right.
Hi to be here. Allison.
Hi to be here.
Welcome to see
She's fallen down the rabbit hole and into the belief hole. Wait, that's
what?
Alice in Wonderland.
No, that's true.
That's Alice, not Allison. Anyway, welcome. We love you.
Allison O'Rourke. Happy to have you. Catherine Emily is also here. Hi, Catherine.
Two names. Two first names. Love it.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Ding, ding.
It's a winner.
Catherine the Great.
Welcome to the hole.
Henry the High Priestess
Ooh.
Is here. Welcome.
Welcome
in. Royal member of the Dogman crew. The Dogman group of the belief hole. Thank you. Thank you for being a Dogman Whisperer, Henry. Maybe Henrietta. Rico Panetta.
Yes,
doesn't get better than Rico Panetta.
No. I was thinking of a pimento.
What the hell?
You know, my favorite act is the Rico act.
Yes.
When he acted to come in the hole.
Oh my gosh, dude. That's really bad. Welcome, Rico. Sorry how awful that was.
Rico. Suave.
Well, Lady Slob Banas Banatsky Weeks.
What do I know?
What?
Well, I'm so sorry about that. Well, Lady Slob.
Maybe it sounds like a Greek name.
Well, ladies.
Banaskowicz.
Was it Corson Daly?
No, Corson Daly. Corson Daly.
Cousin. We had this problem last time.
Perfect Strangers.
We said Step by Step. Yeah, it was Perfect Strangers.
Corson Daly.
Corson Larry. Cousin Larry.
Oh my Carson God. That's so funny, dude.
That's what I said last time, dude. I totally messed it up.
Anyway, what's the name again?
We have no free will. We're literally robots.
I'm getting good on this one because I said it a few times. Well, Lady Slaw Banaskowicz.
Welcome.
Well, Lady Slaw Banaskowicz. That is one of the best names we've heard so far.
Exploded into the hole.
Thank you, sir. Thank you for.
Thank you.
Thank you for so much for being here.
What is that?
I'm slumbering.
Corson Daly.
Jimmy Chestnut is a Dogman
yes.
Whisperer.
Jimmy right. Chestnut cracking on the fire.
Cracking those nuts open.
Falling from the tree and into the hole.
So that's right. Thank you for being a Dogman Whisperer, my
Ooh,
friend.
Your holiday's coming up soon. Christmas? Much?
Yes.
Just
roasting on an open fire.
Anyway, this has been great so far. Harold Williams is a Dogman Whisperer in the hole.
All right. I wonder if he knows Henry.
Yes.
Thank you for signing up. Welcome in, Harold. What an interesting name, Harold. Ashley Kano is also a Dogman Whisperer and will defeat Liu Kang in any Mortal Kombat
fight. I was going to do a Mortal Kombat joke.
Kano wins.
Fight.
She probably really appreciates the Mortal Kombat reference.
I'm sure she does, yes.
Huge fan. Thank you, Ashley, so much for being a Dogman Whisperer.
Oh, it's so good.
Jesse Wright is in the hole. Hi, Jesse. Welcome to the hole.
I'm wrong.
In the right place.
It's always better than wrong to be right, especially if you're Jesse Wright.
Yes.
Aaron Sockwell. Those are punches, fist hits.
She wears great socks, too.
She wears those socks very well.
Yes, she does.
Yes!
Aaron is a he, I think.
Oh, is it A.A.?
Oh, Aaron.
A.A.ron.
A.A.ron.
That's a man.
I couldn't see the spelling. I'm sorry.
A.A.ron is a dogma whisperer.
Welcome.
He is a fantastic sock wearer.
One of the best.
Sock well.
One of the greats.
I love it.
Terrific.
He wears his socks well.
You might want to vote for her because she's doing the data. Heather Polling is here.
Oh, boy. Snore.
Polling data.
Great one, Jared.
That was a polling data reference.
Welcome.
Joke.
I thought that was pretty good.
Yeah. Most people agree that you're an awesome person.
Thank you.
Not you, her.
Oh.
Welcome.
Mary, Ashley, and Katie aren't here, but we do have Kyle Olson.
Nice.
Who's probably my favorite of the Olsons.
Me too.
Thank you so much for being here, Kyle.
Yes,
we love you.
Yes.
Steven Kopis.
Oh. Mm.
Kopis. Kopis. Kopis?
Kopis.
Steven, just laughing, enjoying me fail. Steven Kopis.
I like how you have to like shift your weight in your seat.
I put my whole body into deciphering the names.
This needs to be video.
You're like, oh, Kopis.
Kopis. Oh, it's inside me. Steven, welcome to be here. We're happy to have you, brother.
Yes.
Austin Rhoda is here. Or
Rhododendron.
Excellent. Rhododendron, as pretty as a picture.
Awesome.
The Dogman Whisperer to boot. Isabella O'Neill is another Dogman Whisperer, just ravaging the hole.
Ooh, Isabella, I love
you. Heard for O'Neill? The surf brand, right?
Yes.
Yeah, 1990.
I had no idea.
Now you do.
Thank you, Isabella. Dog lady, if you will.
Body glove.
Lori Warren. Lori Warren has entered the hole. Yes. She's escaped the Warren Occult Museum, and she is here to join us today.
Nice.
Lori
awesome.
Warren. Maybe she's related.
Maybe.
Welcome in, Lauren. We're happy to have you, because you're a Dogman Whisperer, and that makes you extra cool.
Yes.
And also, welcome to the hole. She's maybe a bloodsucker, but no, that doesn't work. Jesse Leach. Is
nice bleeding on the hole.
Trying to have like not a non-offensive thank you, but Leech is it's a great name.
They make great donuts.
Yeah,
that's Lurch. But Leech is
you
also
know, sometimes good qualities from certain people will leech in to the conversation.
Well, if you think about back in the old medical days,
that's
leeches
true.
Were used to bleed people that were sick.
They still use it.
Any way you say it, it doesn't sound good. Leeches were used to bleed people.
Turns out that wasn't the best procedure.
No, they still use it in some places in America for certain procedures. They still use leeches.
Well, okay. Jesse, do you know about this? Let us know, but we're so happy to have you. You're not bleeding us in any bad way.
No.
And if you are, blood is needed.
The blood is needed, John said with all seriousness.
Welcome in.
And finally, our last thank you of the day.
Oh, yes. Thank you to Amanda and Angie, the cake conjurers.
Yes. Make that cake.
Yes, magic. Yes, imagine how magical that tastes.
Special shout out to you.
Yeah.
We love you.
Send us a cake. Are you making a cake right now?
You don't need any cake.
No.
What's that cake look like?
I'll take a cake, though. Everyone needs a little cake.
Welcome into the hole. Yeah, so happy to have you guys. Thank you all so much for your continued support and patronage to the Belief Hole.
Yes.
You guys are exploding the Belief Hole out into the world. It's growing. It's lampooning the earth and lambasting our neighbors.
And that's it.
Mm-hmm. And that's all we have.
Thank you.
See you in the expansion. We'll see you next time
on
Belief Hole.
Later.